All right, we're calling to order the regular meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission for Curie Beach for Tuesday, February 11th at 6:30 p.m. Can I have a motion, first of all, to excuse the chair from not being here tonight?
Motion to excuse the chair.
A second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Take a look at the approval of the agenda. I would think that maybe we'd like to adjust this and table number 1 and 3 under old business. Any object to that?
No objections.
No objection.
Okay. So the motion is to table number 1 and 3 of the old business until next meeting. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Please review the... Oh, excuse me. We haven't approved the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Agenda is passed. Okay. Approval of the minutes from the January 14th meeting. Please take a minute and look at it. We have a motion as amended to accept the agenda as printed. The minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
No, we didn't have a second.
No. Okay. Would you say second, please?
Second.
We have a second. Picky.
We have a motion, second, and ayes.
We have a motion approval and second.
Yeah.
Public comments. Seeing none, we move on. First thing on our old business now is the legislative update with our attorney.
All right. Fun. Evening. You might recall when we discussed this before that there was the large session law that was passed during the last session of the General Assembly. 128-page session law that contained two parts. Part one concerns legislative changes to zoning and development laws that were effective in past July. Part two is a recodification of Chapter 160A, which we've always relied on for decades, into a new Chapter 160D. That won't become effective until next January, so that towns like Curie Beach can amend their ordinance to conform to the new changes. Some of us went to training on 160D a couple of weeks ago, and I learned something interesting in that part one concerning the changes that are currently effective that we'll talk about tonight was actually a bill put together by various home builder associations favoring development. And to use a phrase that's somewhat contemporary, the quid pro quo for the passage of 160D without opposition was for lobbyists like NCLM not to oppose the homeowners version. And there were some things in the homeowners version that I probably did not mention the last time we talked about these changes because I was focused on PZC's role in reviewing zoning text amendments. But I do think, we've already had a training session for the Board of Adjustment, but I do want this board and all the town's public bodies to recognize some significant changes that I'll just summarize. Traditionally, interpretations, violations, and enforcement go to the Board of Adjustment. Some of the changes that are currently effective allow an aggrieved landowner to go directly to civil superior court if he can characterize the decision he's appealing from as representing something unconstitutional or a town acting beyond its statutory limits or consisting of a taking. In other words, very broad language now allows an applicant that was denied a development permit in some instances to go directly to Superior Court and skip the Board of Adjustment. That is significant because there's also another statute that's currently in effect where it is mandatory to award attorney's fees against the town if the town loses a civil action that we've just been talking about. Again, there are certain conditions that have to be met. The catch-all is that a town has operated beyond its excess authority. So if I go to court, if I come for a subdivision plat or a special permit or even a zoning compliance permit, and I'm denied that, and I can fashion that denial, I can claim, I can argue that it was unconstitutional and that it exceeded your authority, I can go directly to court, and if I win, and maintain, if I win on the argument that the town exceeded its authority, I'm going to get attorney's fees. And attorney's fees are very significant. I've got a case in Southern Brunswick County where the attorney's fees are, for a pretty straightforward case, between $60,000 and $80,000. I was very involved in the litigation in the northern part of Brunswick County between Leland, Belleville, and the sanitary district. Those three entities in the span of 18 months spent $2 million in legal fees. So the landscape has really changed with respect to an applicant being allowed to go directly to court and to seek a mandatory, not a discretionary award of attorney's fees. So it's something to keep in mind as the town boards conduct its public business. Tonight we're going to talk about the Chapter 15 text amendments. In looking at the Part 1 changes that are effective since July, there's also one provision which we discussed last month regarding performance guarantees that will show up in Chapter 14, but that's not in front of you tonight. There's also going to be some related changes to Chapter 11, Building and Inspection, John's chapter, so to speak. I will bring those changes to you next month. So they'll be on the agenda next month for review. But turning your attention to what we're doing tonight, the first set of amendments regard changes to the definitions. And let me say one thing about that. Chapter 160D, which won't become effective until January, is heavily infused with certain terminology. Development permit, land development regulations. Some of the changes that are currently effective utilize that same language in order to be there when the Chapter 160D becomes effective. So it's those types of definitions plus some things that John and the Commission felt would be useful to include in the code that have been set forth in the definitions. If you turn to page 16, of the definitions, we should have an interview up on the screen, I believe. You'll see the first revised definition for building. One of the changes in the Part 1 legislative revisions required that the definitions for building, dwelling unit, and sleeping unit, which this town doesn't utilize, building, dwelling, and dwelling unit have to be consistent with the definitions in the state building code. That's, from my perspective, that's very significant. I was able to get the Superior Court of New Hanover County to reverse a denial by the Board of Adjustment based on a preemption argument that followed a statute that required that a definition of, I forget what it was, dwelling unit, I think, needed to be consistent with the state code. The presiding judge bought that argument, decided that that statute had preempted the town's attempt to regulate, and that was one of the reasons why the court reversed that decision, and the applicant got what it looked for, which was not provided by BOA. So when you building, literally from the state building code, has now been revised to say any structure used or intended for supporting or sheltering any use or occupancy. The next change shows up on page 18. It should come across as a different colored font, and up on the screen in green. There's those terms that I mentioned before, development permit and dwelling down below that. Development and development permit figure largely in 160D and also are referenced in the current legislative changes. Again, dwelling unit and dwelling on that page, dwelling unit on the next page have been revised or have been added and are consistent with the state building code definition, so we avoid the risk of preemption. If you turn to page 21, again, these are two terms that show up in the current changes, and in particular in 160D, land development regulation and landowner. If you go to page 23, you'll see multi-phase development, which is important with respect to vested rights both now and when 160D becomes effective. And then finally, on page 29, we provide a definition for vested rights. You might recall the discussion last month that your code did not reference at all vested rights and permit choice rules. And with John's input, we decided that it'd be useful to include those provisions in the code so there wouldn't be, in John's words, any surprises. But we need the definitions to do that. So there was the vested right definition. If you turn to page 1, after the definitions, you'll see the text amendment for section 1506.020, rezoning. This is pursuant to the legislative change preventing an applicant requesting downzoning without the written consent of the landowner. And you'll see that show up in the green font in section subsection B. No amendment to the regulations or map shall be initiated and be enforceable without the written consent of all property owners whose property is the subject of a downzoning amendment, unless that downzoning amendment is initiated by the town. The town can do it without consent, but anybody else requires the property owner's consent. If you turn to the next page, for the ordinance for 1508.075, this is the vested right provisions that we've included that we're recommending the council adopt for inclusion into the code. It lays out how to achieve those rights, the duration of those rights, and how those rights are terminated. And again, a vested right basically means if I come in for a permit and I'm approved, I can do what that permit entitles me to do without worrying whether the town's going to change its rules in the next 2 years. Town can change its rules, but they don't apply to me because I got a vested right in that development by having the permit approved. Another reason that we are recommending including that into the code is that vested rights gets a lot of attention when Chapter 160D comes around. If you turn, again, the rest of the vested rights provisions on page 2, the next page 1, concerns 1508.076, this is the permit choice rule. You recall this is an interesting rule that if I submit an application for approval and before my permit is approved and issued, the town changes the rules concerning that particular application, I, the applicant, decide whether to go under the old rules or the new rules. That's simple enough to understand. Where it becomes a little complicated is that the ability to, in a situation where you're going to get multiple permits for development, take a subdivision, I get a preliminary plat approval, I get a final plat approval, I've got a zoning compliance permit, I've got a building permit, and I got a CO. My ability to choose which of the, and if any of those permits have a rule change in them, I'm allowed to pick between the old rule and the new rule for all of those subsequent permits within an 18-month period based on my initial approval of the subdivision plat. So if I get my preliminary plat approval for the next 18 months, whenever I jump through another permit hoop, if the rules for that particular permit hoop change, I can choose between the old and the new. That's where it gets complicated in its application. And again, the commission, John, felt it would be wise to plug that into the code so there wouldn't be any surprises.
Did we find out if that was applicable to the entire thing? So if you go with the old, it's everything old. You can't pick and choose between, I want this from the old rules and this from the new rules and
no,
break
it's
it up.
Either or.
It's
you can't choose.
Okay. I thought that was the case. I just wanted to ask.
So the rest of the permit choice rule is set forth on page 2, which takes us to the new page 1 for 150880. That's the town's special use permit. After the amendment, you go to page 3. All right, so we're dealing with green text here. Trying to think. Oh, there it is. On page 4, top of page 4, one of the current changes included a precise list. When you get a special use permit, and these are granted by town council in Curie Beach, reasonable conditions can be imposed by council on that permit, as long as it's related to the approved use. There are some things, however, that the General Assembly in the last session said the town cannot impose as conditions. And we took the existing special use permit provision and simply listed those things which cannot be imposed as a condition, and that shows up in green on you. Self-explanatory. And that may be, that's the last of the changes for chapter 15. So again, to sum up, I'll bring you chapter 14 and chapter 11 next month. What we've done in this instance is focus on the chapter 15 of zoning text amendments. Most of the attention was spent on definitions because of the way the old and new statutes rely on those. We included permit choice rule vested rights just to be very transparent and clear about how those things work for anybody to read the code. We've included in the special use permit those things that council cannot impose as conditions. And I think that about does it, unless you all have some questions.
You said that when you're, there was an 18-month waiting period or a period.
The ability, based on the original initial approval, the ability to choose which new or old rules for subsequent permit applications is confined to an 18-month period after the day of the initial approval. So if I get my preliminary plat today, and I've got some additional permits to get over the next 18 months, and the rules concerning all or any of those additional permits have changed, I can still choose between the old and the new, but after 18 months, I don't have that option anymore.
So after 18 months, whatever rule, whatever you pick is legit. I mean, that's what you would go by. Or does it?
I get the preliminary plat approval today. On the last day of the 18 months, I want a building permit. You all have changed the rules. I can decide on old or new rules for that building permit. But on the day after that, the first day after the 18-month period, if I look for a zoning compliance permit and you change the rules on that, I'm stuck with the new rules because my 18-month period is
left. Got it. Okay. but what you've decided prior to the 18 months is what is accepted.
Yes, and I think you get that to make that decision during those 18 months each time you apply for the next permit.
Okay.
There was also a question that we dealt with several months ago on zoning changes. How does this change what we did there? Because we went and changed some of the language previously to say that basically only an interested party could change.
That's a great point. I was going to get into that. Let's find that. I believe that is after the definitions.
Is that the vested?
If you go to page 1 after 30, you should see the ordinance for 1506 over 20. Does everybody have that?
Yes.
Yes.
And I think you're referring to the strikeout on what was the original paragraph under 1506.020, which shows up in red, a rezoning application may be initiated by reviewing the decision-making board or the landowner in prospective entities. Is that what you're referring to?
That's what I'm referring to, because we put that in there because of a specific scenario.
That is correct. However, we put that in there because of a specific scenario, but when I researched that issue, I could not find an authority one way or another, whether somebody that doesn't own the property can petition to amend the zoning of that property. I don't own your property, can I come in and seek a text amendment that affects your property? At the time, logically, it seemed to me that you would not have standing to make such an application. However, as I just got finished saying, I could not find any case law or statutory law that answered that question one way or another. And questions of first impression are quite common. But in this new legislative change, I don't have it in front of me. I've got the statute in the file. But basically it says that if you want to seek the downzoning of property, then you need the owner's consent. That has to suggest that somebody other than the owner can make the application for that downzoning. So even though I couldn't find an authoritative source that permitted or limited a third party from applying for a text amendment affecting somebody else's property, the very fact that that amendment could go forward if the owner's written consent was obtained suggests rather clearly to me that a third party does have that ability.
But it does require the owner's written consent if it's a third party, so that may be the limiting factor.
Yeah, well, that is the limiting factor. But the fact that someone could obtain that consent in theory and move forward with an application to downzone that other person's property informs me that third parties do have that ability. So when I went back and looked at that recent text amendment, the language that struck out, that seemed to me to be incorrect because it didn't allow for that third party scenario.
Who is third party?
If I want to downzone your property, I can file an application to do so, provided I get your consent.
It could be anybody.
The third party. What I mean by saying third party is somebody other than the property owner.
Okay.
Yeah, but if that can't go through without the property owner's consent, then
it's limited.
It's limited.
Oh yeah, it's limited.
Yeah. So you can't file to downzone somebody's property and then get it pushed through without their consent.
That's correct.
And I think that's what we did the original language for, was so that
to prevent that scenario. Right. But what the original language did not provide for was the third party scenario. Given the recent statutory change, which contemplates, in theory, a third-party scenario, I felt it best to go back and delete that language in the code, which didn't contemplate a third party, so that we could conform to the statute. I wouldn't want something on our books that prevented a third party from applying and then having them go directly to court to seek attorney's fees because we didn't pay attention to that possibility.
I agree with that. I think the fact that there's that it can't happen without the property owner's involvement solves that problem.
I agree.
Thank you.
So, are there any other questions? If not, you could entertain a motion to recommend county of submitting these to council and recommending their adoption of the same. There is a proposed consistency statement somewhere.
I have it.
Okay, and you would have to adopt that by a separate motion.
I'm pretty comfortable with it. I'll make a motion to submit this to council.
Second. Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries.
In which case, I'll make the second motion to send the consistency statement with it.
The zoning consistency statement.
That motion should be for this commission to adopt that consistency statement. The chairman will sign it, and it will be automatically delivered.
Okay.
Motion to adopt the consistency statement?
Second.
Made.
Second. Okay. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We now get to prohibited uses, gentlemen. We have received, a couple of us went out and did some research on what's out there for prohibited business use, and was provided to the council, to the commission, to look at. Again, this is just research. It doesn't mean we're recommending something like this. It's just what's out there. And please remember what the state is currently saying, that if you don't prohibit it specifically, it's okay. So with that in mind...
Can I make one comment?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Actually, a question and a comment. I was doing something, wasn't paying as close attention as I should. When you said out there, are you referring to your comprehensive list that you found these things prohibited elsewhere, or...?
There are two lists that are put out. The business is prohibited that sell, and the second one that was put in prohibited activities in business zoning.
My question is, did you find examples of this in other jurisdictions, or are you just focusing on the activities and the uses?
On my list, no, I did not look at other jurisdictions.
No, neither did I.
And the reason I ask that is, keep in mind, we're only in a discussion stage right now. Keep in mind that there needs to be a legal overview to make sure any issues that I don't anticipate today aren't nonetheless present. For example, back in the day, if you tried to prohibit the adult sex stores, for lack of a better, adult entertainment sites, uses. You know, that turned into a lot of litigation. I think it was based on the First Amendment. All I'm saying is when we get this list to where we want it to be, I would recommend that legal look over pretty carefully to rule out any issues that we might not be aware of today.
That's fair.
Now, is there a way that you could recommend that we could research? I mean, are these items?
I suggest that you all do what you want to do and then turn it over to me.
Okay, that's the thing.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of issues, and if there were, they would probably center on First Amendment and possible takings types issues. Kind of, you know, if I can't use my property, then you all are taking it. You need to compensate me. I'm not saying these things are issues that end up being applicable, but they are issues, and there may be others that need to be ruled out just to make sure. But at this stage, I'd go ahead and I think it's great that you all are looking at it as seriously as you are. and I don't want to hinder that. I want you just to get to where you want to go, and then let me.
And then tell us we've gone too far.
Yeah. Yeah, give me the green light.
Okay.
One of the things I was thinking about is that we talked about earlier that we really only have three categories here in the town. It's business mixed use, and various levels of residential. So I talked to Beth earlier, and she said for next meeting she could have it, or during the month, and provide it to us, where we would get this list with, and some blank spots, with the categories, and we would look at each of them and say, okay, yeah, limit this, and wherever you mark it, you would limit it. And that way we could get a consensus of the commission on how, or the board on how we felt about some of these items, and of course, obvious items to even add. Did that help the process along or not?
I think so.
I think it would work.
Yeah, okay. I think that would be very helpful, but I think that, as council pointed out, there's some really fine lines, especially with charities,
right,
or people that have raising money for whatever reason here locally. There's a lot of fundraising opportunities that you don't want to stop that, but you want to. It's not somebody setting up a business.
Being flocked.
Remember, these are businesses being created, not individuals.
True, but selling Girl Scout cookies, is that where does that fall?
Well, I think it's better to go. It's easier to reduce the numbers once you have the universe. So I would say that we should go and put as much as we think, and think that's reasonable, on these lists, mm-hmm, and then talk about it among ourselves and eliminate some of them or add some, and then let council.
So if I hear you correctly, for next month, Beth would take a list basically by residential, business, and whatever.
These two lists and anything anybody else wants to add.
And anything that's currently there.
Yes.
Including which is currently listed there as prohibited.
And do we have any input from the chairman on this yet? Because I know that was one of his pet projects.
Did not
the list
comment
that we have are from you all, right?
Right. Correct. He did not comment on my list or...
Nor mine.
Yeah. No. So we're just trying to keep the ball rolling on that.
We're not taking action tonight other than...
No.
Just simply putting a plan together to make it go forward.
This is discussion, but as discussion, I do have a question for council on an alternate idea that I replied via email on. And, I understand we cannot, and I'm thinking particularly in the residential district, we cannot kind of just blanket say all businesses, right? We're being told we have to identify all of the prohibited individual activities. And my thought was, how about we approach it from a different viewpoint and limit the amount of foot traffic, or limit the amount of for-profit foot traffic that, a home-based business could exist, but if it doesn't create a disturbance or an issue, like a realtor that works from home, or somebody that telecommutes from home, or somebody that is operating a business that's in a remote location, but they operate it from their home, so that we don't actually limit something that's legitimate, but if we limit the amount of, and what I coined in my head was for-profit foot traffic, meaning shippers and UPS and customers, then we would essentially limit the businesses without limiting remote operations.
Let me say four or five things. Number one, think about, we'll continue with your example of home occupations. The first thing I would recommend is that you look, and you may have already done this. If it was me, I would look at other jurisdictions to see how they regulate home occupations, and I would do that because regulating home occupations under zoning regulations is SOP, and it's been SOP for decades. So I would see how they do that. The reason I say that is you could then compare the way it's being done to your concept of getting at it by regulating indicators like foot traffic, or whether the activities associated with the home occupation rise to the level of a nuisance. My comment to that is think about enforcement and think about redundancy. How would you establish standards? And they have to be the reasonable man standards. Would you be spending time defining those standards? And is that feasible? Likewise, if you're going to focus on conditions that rise to the level of a nuisance, look at your provisions for regulating nuisance, because it may already be in there. And we had some of these discussions about short-term rentals. So your concept is interesting, but no disrespect, nebulous. So you've got to think about developing the criteria that you're contemplating, and also whether the code already addresses that. The final couple points I would make involve the Supreme Court decision that brought us to this point. Practically every, if you look at 20 North Carolina ordinances, zoning ordinances, you'll find the same, what I call catch-all prohibition. If it's not listed in the table of uses, it's prohibited. That's what was voided by the Supreme Court in 2016, and that is also one of the key arguments I relied on and that the court accepted regarding that BOA decision. I got reversed north of here. That court goes on to say that what is acceptable, so that language is gone. What is acceptable are two things. That when the proposed, and you need to keep this in mind, when the proposed, because it will influence how you develop your list and what the final list will look like. Those two things are this. One, be express about what you're prohibiting, and what was old section 79 in chapter 19 is well done. That's our short list of prohibited activities. And that's a good model. And again, I've not seen that in any other jurisdiction. But the other important thing to keep in mind is the court said that if a use comes in that's not in the table of uses, it's permissible to analyze that application by finding, if it exists, a use in the table of uses that is similar. I can't think of an example of it off the top of my head, but bungee jumping versus paragliding mm-hmm. in Carolina Beach. So I've got a table of uses. I've killed my catch-all prohibition. Somebody comes in with X. My first analytical step is to say, is there anything in our table of uses that closely resembles X? If so, then all I got to do is what my table of uses tells me. You know, where does X want to go, and how does that those district regulations deal with Y, which I think is very similar to X. That's the way you need to start. Beyond that, and then that could help you winnow these lists down. Beyond that, then it's an express listing of the prohibited uses. The best example is we provided definitions of we didn't ban container housing. What we did was define container housing and prohibited the use of container housing as dwelling units. So, and then another approach is, and this is often used for adult entertainment and wireless towers, although you've got one out back. And a planner could do this, John could probably do this much more easily than I can, but to say it's permissible in District X, but to set up geographical distance limitations that can never be met.
And that's what I was thinking about when I thought about that. I was actually thinking, okay, so you're not necessarily trying to prohibit and list everything under the sun that you could possibly think of. Let's think of some other way of writing that prohibitive language that does fit, like the geographical restrictions.
You might have a use that you don't want. Let's say vaping, okay? Let's say that there was a hypothetically speaking, let's say there is consensus against a vaping store. Well, we know our district regs for residential uses are sufficient to keep it out of those districts. And if PCC's attorney comes back and says, well, be careful about how you regulate, and vaping is not a good example because I think it's being prohibited anyway without controversy, but let's assume there was some issue about that. Then what you would do is come back and say, you look at your different districts, and let's say you had an industrial district that had a school right across the street in a different, like a institutional district. You would say, okay, vaping stores are not prohibited, but you can place it in the industrial district, provided it is 2,000 feet away from any school, and that school is 1,000 feet away. You haven't prohibited it, but you can't go in there as long as that school is there.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, is instead of having the catch-all, which is gone, what is another way to have a catch-all that isn't gone?
Yeah. I was just looking at the city of Jacksonville, North Carolina, and they do. They have a lot of stuff here, but it says, home occupations shall not create measurable increase in traffic within the neighborhood as determined by development services director. But there's other things. They limit the size. You have to do a permit. They limit the size of the space that you could use, like an in-home business. No signs. And you're limited to no increase in garbage and things of that sort. No fumes, no electrical interference.
Instead of doing this, now you're putting it on ordinance to keep it. I think that is a fine idea, but it's very nebulous and it's going to be very hard to
enforce.
You can put it out there. You can't enforce. I mean, how many UPS trucks are too many in my neighborhood?
Well,
but this is what the city of Jacksonville has done. But you have in the permit application, this is where it lists it off. So when
but most of these people aren't doing permits. They're just
another big battleground is noise ordinances. Are they calibrated? If they're not calibrated, then the standard? Are you using a calibrated measuring device? If so, is that calibration up to date? Because if you're not using a calibrated measuring device, you're relying on subjective interpretations by the zoning officer, and they can be claimed as arbitrary and capricious. And again, don't forget the ability now to go to court in certain instances and get mandatory attorney's fees.
Right.
So my entreaty to you all is have fun with this, do what you want to do, and then let's review it. But let's not rush this. I sense that it's going to be a more comprehensive project than at first blush it may appear. And of course, we've still got some text amendments to work through before we... This is going to be a comprehensive project, but it's very proactive on your part to do it. Like I said, I haven't seen another jurisdiction that, except for you all, that does not rely on the catch-all prohibition, which is now void, and which does not have a list of prohibited uses, which you all have. So pat yourselves on the back. Don't move too fast. Yeah, let's enhance that list, but don't go at it too quickly.
We never move too fast.
Not around us.
Hey, Tony, what did you use to Google the search on it? What parameters did you use?
Home occupation.
Does home occupation know? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you just went to the city of Jacksonville?
It's one that came up. Okay. And it has, it pulled up their home occupation application, city of Jacksonville, North Carolina. Then it has a lot of stuff there that, I mean, it's like, it has so many things there that would deter you from doing too much.
Again, I was just thinking of how do you have the catch-all when you can't have the catch-all, just like the geographic limitations that were just discussed. I was looking to see if there was another way of doing that, and it may not pan out. I understand that it's a very...
I mean, it should be part of our going in position that we put that in there, too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. 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 But for now, the next step.
So what we're saying is the next step is to wait for Beth to develop that chart.
I agree with that.
And then we next month we go into
it further. Do a little research on the traffic.
Yeah.
Right. pick a couple towns and see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Agreement, gentlemen? We agree?
We agree.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Beth, congratulations. You got another job. We don't give those away lightly, Beth, so enjoy it. Okay, the next person on our agenda is to, I believe, swear in a new alternative member. I believe that's Kathleen and Mindy have to come up front and do your thing. Congratulations, Kathleen. Want to do a speech? Kathleen, you want a speech? All right, we go to member items down the road. Anybody?
Mentioned a couple of her things.
I gave you a chance to speak.
Oh, no.
Okay, I thought so.
We've talked among ourselves about when the new 10-year planning document comes out, about looking at the planning portion of our board, having certain sections of that maybe overseen or people from the board assigning to it. So just wanted to bring that out for the record. And since it is a planning document, I kind of looked at the Planning Zoning Board to get more involved in that 10-year plan. I don't know what council view on that would be. So.
Still a work in progress.
No, but I know.
About the land use plan, right? We're doing
right,
the
right.
Well, we're going to have a land use plan committee. Two councilmen, two people from the P&Z.
Oh, okay.
And three citizens.
All right.
And give us an odd number to get public input.
Okay, great. Well, that's.
We're not going to probably kick in that until April or May, but now that we have more time to do
this. All right, so two people will be on there, and we can look at what things we need to do in
plan. And we can be briefed as it happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is great.
All right.
Anything else?
It'll all filter for y'all.
Pardon?
It'll all filter for y'all.
Yeah.
David?
I'm good.
Tony?
I'm good.
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.